Hey, good morning. Welcome back to Corinth in Your Car. I'm Josh, and I'm here with Luke and Adam. We are excited to jump into another conversation, to have some fun, to recap a sermon, to play a game or do something at the end here today. But first, as always, want to do a check-in. It's Thursday. It is sunny outside as we sit here and record this. So how are you guys feeling this week?
Feeling pretty good. The key word sunny there has been kind of nice. The weather's been good this week.
It has.
So I've been trying to enjoy some of that. Apart from the fact that I've gotten some just random headaches this week and am recovering from a pulled hamstring, it's been a good week. And
it's a bummer.
Yeah, it is a little bit of a bummer.
Do you want to share with everyone how you pulled your hamstring?
I guess I can. At this point, I've shared it with quite a few people. I even told the story last night at youth group. I was running from cows.
You just couldn't.
Were chasing me.
Move fast enough.
I was not able to move fast enough. But I pulled my hamstring and made it across the cattle grate in time. So I would rather have a pulled hamstring than be ground beef.
Yeah, for sure.
Quite the experience. But no,
so, were you wearing the llama costume?
No, not then. Now I have worn the llama costume in that pasture before, but this time it was just me. And I guess I made him mad. I don't know.
Yeah.
I was kind of driving the
ring fever, man.
Across. I don't know.
Yeah. But, so if it's red for a bull, were you wearing blue, green?
I don't know what I was wearing.
Yellow?
I don't know. Most of my wardrobe is a variation of blue. So
that's what it is. It's the opposite of red.
Blue. Probably there.
Right? Is red? Is blue the opposite of red?
I don't know that colors technically
have opposites. I don't think it's an opposite because there's the three primary.
Yeah.
It's true.
It wouldn't be opposite. Right. It's just different, and you combine them to get the secondaries and all the rest. Yeah. So
I wonder what Google's
doing. The weather's been really good this week.
Red.
Tristan and I met halfway for dinner between here and Macon on Tuesday night, and we did like a little picnic at Indian Springs State Park.
Oh, that's beautiful
down
there.
Georgia.
Yeah,
We tossed the softball around, enjoyed the weather. It was a good time. So not been a bad week at all.
That's good. Yeah.
Aquamarine.
Aquamarine is the opposite of red.
It's the opposite of red.
Yeah.
So blue was in the right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
aquamarine is kind of like a blue green.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. March Madness is almost over. This is the last weekend. The men's side. Sorry, Luke. Texas almost made it. They had a good run. I thought they were going to.
Yeah.
Actually, you know.
I know. It's okay.
Iowa on the women's side. I know. I was talking to Melissa a few days ago, and she said, if they make it to the championship, or if they win, I think she's going to fly her flag. But she's more of a football fan.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
But it's still going to be exciting there.
It's exciting, man.
Yeah, it was fun to watch that. Adam, in the sermon, you spoke about waiting. And so I just thought it would be fun to ask, what's the longest line that you can remember ever waiting in? So DMV, roller coaster, Star Wars release, Apple release, sporting event, something like that.
I think it would be, and I can't remember. It was either Phantom Menace or the re-release of the original trilogy of Star Wars.
You go to the theater and wait like overnight?
Yeah, we didn't go overnight, okay. But we were there a really long time for that. And I can't remember if it was Phantom Menace or if it was the re-release of like New Hope or something like that. But it was a good 8-hour wait.
Oh, wow.
Nice. That's a good
thing. Yeah, we were pretty front.
So did you bring like food with you?
It was at Joplin. It was in the food court. It was in the mall. And so we just would like break away and go grab Chinese food or something like that.
I used to love those Chinese food bowls. You could like $5 and get a so much food.
Springfield style cashew chicken.
Yes.
I don't trust Chinese food in the mall.
Joplin Mall, you can.
I don't.
It was good.
Go get the Chick-fil-A.
That's back when... Yeah, Chick-fil-A in Joplin, at least, that's the only place it was. It was in the mall food court.
It was in the mall before it was...
There was no freestanding,
Oh, now there's two freestandings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't even know that Chick-fil-A existed as a standalone restaurant until I moved down here. I was just thought they were in malls.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
We were sheltered. Yeah. Missouri. Luke, what's your longest line that you can remember?
I don't know. There's been several. There's a really... popular water park with one of the most popular water slides in the world in New Braunfels, Texas, called Schlitterbahn with the Master Blaster.
Yeah.
And that was a pretty long wait for a water slide. I think we planned on this, but my brothers and my sister-in-law quite a while ago. It was probably like 2016, 2017. We waited in line at a 2M smokehouse in San Antonio. Just kind of like got in line at 8 a.m., 8:30 a.m. They opened the doors at 11. So that we were first in line.
Yeah.
We had lawn chairs. We brought like catchphrase and some snacks and just waited until they opened the doors so that we could
the brisket there is what goes fast,
so,
right?
So the beef rib.
The beef rib
goes super, super fast. If you kind of show up around lunchtime, you'll probably be able to get some barbecue, but not the beef rib. And so we got in there. Oh my goodness. Best tasting food I've ever, like, that bite of beef rib, probably the best bite of food I've ever had in my life. It was so good. So, so good. So that was a fun experience. I've been caught in some drive-through lines pretty good. One of them, my mother-in-law and my wife, at the Freddy's in Athens got stuck in the drive-through line at, for about 45, 50 minutes.
Really?
That was quite
when you say you got stuck, like they actually couldn't get out?
Like we couldn't get it out. It was locked in. We had cars in front of us, cars behind us, and Freddy's drive-throughs like are kind of curbed around, so you can't like just zip out of there whenever you're tired of waiting. So that was a long drive-through experience for us. So yeah, lots of lines. Things come to mind.
I remember one road trip we had. This isn't really a line, I guess, but I guess it kind of is. Like traffic jam. It was in Texas, I think outside of Houston, but I can't remember for sure. But I mean, traffic was like, it was stopped. Mm-hmm. And our air conditioner wasn't working.
Oh man.
And so we thought, well, let's just roll down the windows. And then it got hotter. Like, so it was just, it was bad. Waiting is really hard, really tough sometimes.
For the birds.
Yeah.
Not a fan.
Not a fan, which you gave about 10 or 12 examples in the sermon about how you hated to wait.
Yeah, and I cut it short.
Yeah, and well, thank you for not keeping us waiting to get to the sermon. Yeah. Now, the story in the sermon is about Jairus, and in some senses, he wasn't really waiting a long time, because it had been a sudden turn for his daughter, or so it seems. But it sure felt like it, because when your daughter is on her deathbed, it's like the seconds feel like hours. So let's get into that story. Adam, give a recap from the sermon as we are, week 5 now of Healer, and 4 of them have been in this long narrative, Mark 4, 5. So.
Yeah, and so thanks to Josh for not stepping on Jairus' toes last week with the interruption here in this story. Yeah, it's just a fascinating story. You know, you got the guy that goes and gets Jesus because his daughter is dying. You've got that little interlude there where the woman with the bleeding problem experiences a healing. And it's just an amazing story there because I can't imagine the emotion and frustration, the fear, just all of the emotions that would be going through this guy's head, aggravation. I think I would be ticked off.
Yeah.
I mean, and just thinking through all these things that this guy has got to be feeling. And then Jesus being Jesus, he knew exactly what was going on. He wasn't caught surprise. He wasn't caught by surprise with any of this stuff. He knew exactly what was going to happen. And so he heals the daughter, raises her from the dead. And Jairus was hoping for a fever to be broken, and he ended up with a resurrection. So got more than what he was looking for. So it's just a fantastic story, one of my favorite stories.
Yeah,
I was actually really shocked that I hadn't, at least through my notes, I couldn't find where I had actually just preached on this story.
Oh,
and
cool.
What year is this? What year is it? We're in
23.
In the 14 years I've been a senior minister here, I've referenced it several times, but I think this is the first time I've actually preached on it.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Adam, you were saying just the frustration of Jairus not being able to move. Like the crowd just stops. I remember when Naya turned 5, she had a birthday party and Rosalie was 3. And she busted her head open, bleeding out of her forehead. Like, you know, we got to go to the ER right now.
Right.
There's blood everywhere coming out of her head. And she was fine. It looked way worse than it actually was. She still got the stitches and all that. But I could just, I couldn't imagine in that moment. Like, my mother-in-law was in town visiting for the party. And I couldn't imagine if she was just like, oh, hey, hold on, guys. We need to make a you know, make you a sack lunch real quick, and we need to get you all packed up, and like, no, we're rushing out the door now, you know. And so just as a dad trying to put myself in Jairus's shoes is pretty wild. So Luke, what was challenging, helpful, funny, encouraging for you from the message or from the story?
Yeah, I think the observation Adam made coming out of the just narrative of the story that Jesus will not be hurried kind of resonated with me a little bit. Mm. The line where he said his grace never operates according to our schedules and timing.
Mm-hmm.
That line frustrates me in the most encouraging way,
mm-hmm.
you know, because there are so many different seasons of my life where I'm like, okay, come on, let's go. Why aren't you active right now? And it's not, you know, it's not that he's not active. It's just that I'm impatient and wanting to see something extravagant right away. Where as in so many of our stories, like this story, Jesus is like, well, hold on, I've got so much more in mm-hmm. store for this. Mm-hmm. And so just a reminder of that about Jesus, that he's not the type of guy that's going to rush from one thing to the next, because he takes his time to actually care for people. We've talked about this in sermons and on podcasts quite a bit, but and Jesus was the type of guy who had the freedom in his schedule or routine to be interrupted, and those interruptions mm-hmm. were always a good thing. This story is no different. And so Jesus isn't the type of guy who is in a hustle and bustle, hurrying from one place to the next all of the time, even whenever it might actually cost someone something.
Yeah, and I think too that the thing that just kind of occurs to me while you're saying that is not only is he a guy who was not hurried, he was a guy who refused to be hurried.
Right. Yeah.
He did not let, you know, other people's schedule dictate his pace.
Like,
you know, so you go to John 11 with the raising mm-hmm. of Lazarus. You know, it's like he dilly dallies around for, what is it, 4 days or something like that?
Yeah.
You know,
and that's what they get angry at him.
And they get angry at him. It's like, why aren't you doing
it? It's almost like whenever I'm going through something and I'm wanting Jesus to show up and do something about it, and I ask or expect him to hurry it up, it's almost like I'm looking at him and saying, would you act outside of your own character here for a minute? Right.
Well, yeah.
You know, he wants to help, he wants to do something, but it's like, I'm trying to hurry Jesus up, and that's just not who he is.
And if you stop and you think about the arrogance that we have whenever we're doing that, it's like, hey, creator of the universe, sustainer of all things, the one who spoke all things into existence, the one who calms the storm, casts out the demons, the one who feeds 5,000 with a happy meal. I've got an idea that I think is better than yours. Yeah.
Well, that's the story of Job, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, that's Job's like, what are you doing here, God? He's like, hold on, Job. Mm-hmm. Were you around whenever I did this? Mm-hmm. And I don't remember you there. I don't remember that being your idea.
Yeah.
And it gets to a point.
It's that phrase that we've used. I don't remember who it's original with by any stretch of imagination. But, you know, that God is seldom early, but he's never late.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. so his timing is always better than our timing.
Yep.
And we just, because we're impatient, we don't want to wait. We want to throw kerosene on a gas stove to get the eggs to cook a little quicker.
Right.
We don't enjoy it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Luke, you mentioned, Jesus will not be hurried. Something that hit me is, Adam, you referenced it already a little bit. Jairus was looking for a fever to break, but instead he got a resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
And, just obviously a resurrection is better, but it has to get worse before it can get
better. It costs a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, it just hit me like, man, something has to die first. Yeah. And so sometimes for Jesus to exceed, or I guess all the time, most of the time, for him to exceed our expectations, we have to be broken first in some way so he mm-hmm. can mm-hmm. so he can do that. And he does that all the time. So Mark 4 and 5, we've been here for quite a while. Let's look just for a little bit at the 30,000-foot blimp view from just some current, like some common themes running through. Just how do these four stories, the calming of the storm, the demoniac, Jairus, and the woman, all fit together? Luke, I'll start with you because I know you've mentioned this was a project for you in college, like a term paper type thing. And so what things kind of jump into your mind from that project you did?
Yeah, two words. One of them we talked about before we hit play on the podcast. And the first one is fear. So there's an element of fear in all of mm-hmm. these different narratives with the storm. The disciples are terrified of the storm, and then Jesus calms it, and then they're terrified of Jesus. with the demoniac. The demoniac himself probably is pretty scared, but then the disciples are scared. And then the people, after they see what Jesus has did, they're so scared they ask him to leave. Then you've got some of the fear of the woman from last week. Mm-hmm. And then how can you not be afraid in this moment if you're Jairus and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So there's definitely some fear. And then just I think the power is the second word, just the power of Jesus that's on display. Mm-hmm. So Mark is narrating this story in such a way that the audience that is reading this are coming to the conclusions that Jesus has power over creation from calming the storm.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus has power over the demons and spiritual realm from the casting out of the demons. Jesus has power over our physical bodies from the healing of the woman with the blood issue. And then Jesus has power over death itself from the resurrection. And so pretty much anything you can think of, the power of Jesus was just displayed over that.
Mm-hmm.
And so really, really just cool way that Mark strings these together to talk about those.
Yeah. Adam, what do you think with the 30,000 foot blimp view? Why does Mark put these together like he does?
Well, I think that what Luke just said there at the end was exactly where I was going. So the one thing I would add to it is it's the progression. It starts with the progression over creation. Then it moves to the power over the demons of hell. So therefore, surely he can handle our biggest problems, which is illness and death.
Right. Yep.
And so it's just a strong progression that Mark is laying out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I referenced my story a while ago with Rosalie going to the hospital. Jairus felt like his need was super urgent. Have you ever guys had a moment of medical emergency where it was like, man, I got to go now? And what feeling were you feeling?
I tend to delay.
Yeah, I will not go to the hospital unless someone makes me.
Well, I mean, your thumb, Adam, I think of that.
Well, yeah, you know, but that was like, I had bone sticking out, so.
Right.
Well, that's a go now.
That was a go now thing. Yeah. But like, so what happened at the end of the year is, you know, Jaden, our daughter, we'd got back from a real quick trip and spending time with family. And so like 2 or 3 in the morning, she knocks on our door and she's like, my stomach is killing me and these things. Mm-hmm. And so my initial reaction is always like, well, you'll probably be all right.
There's Tums in the medicine cabinet.
Yeah, there's Tums in the medicine.
Go get a drink and go back.
Yeah, go get a drink. You know, you'll be fine. Do you need me to go get some crackers or something like that?
Yep.
But like the pain wouldn't subside. It wouldn't subside. It wouldn't subside. Now, Jennifer is much more urgent than I am with this stuff because I'm like, man, I just don't want to go to the hospital. And
it's a thing.
Be fine.
It's a whole thing. It's a copay, all of that.
Yeah, she'll be fine. You know, and so anyway, at about 5:30 in the morning after, you know, just like being up with her all night, Jennifer was like, I don't care. I'm taking her to the hospital right now. And
you can come with us.
Yeah,
or
you can
stay
you can
here.
Stay here. Or you can come. And I was like, all right, I'll come along. And long story short, I mean, Jaden wasn't faking it. she had an appendicitis and so had to have her appendix taken out. And so, and you know, you're in that moment and you're even in the ER. I think we were in the ER for like 5 or 6 hours. And there was some time there to where they'd given her a little bit of pain medication, but it hadn't touched it. And so I'm sitting here watching my daughter, you know, suffer.
She suffers. Yeah.
And I would.
It hurts.
She was hurting really bad. And so it's just like, where's a nurse? Where's somebody? Why won't they do something about it? And so I guess that would be kind of a medical urgency and emergency to where it's like, would somebody please just do something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it kind of gives you a little bit of identification with Jairus here.
Yeah, and I knew that, and I knew that my daughter wasn't dying.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm thinking probably the most go that I've ever had was I was a lot younger. My little brother Wade had his first seizure. Ooh. We didn't know, It was the first one, so we didn't know what was happening. So I remember though, because here's the kind of the funny story. Well, it's not funny that he had a seizure, but we called an ambulance down and our little brother Scott was in the shower and Clark and I were like knocking on the door and yelling at Scott. Like Wade Wade just had something happen to him. An ambulance is here. You need to finish up and like get out of the shower. And like Scott didn't believe us because, to be fair, well, it sounds like something that we would make up. So Scott stayed in the shower and we got mad at him. He's like, no, I swear we're telling you the truth, man. We're telling you the truth. And so he got out of the shower and walked out and he's like,
oh,
whoa,
no. Oh,
okay.
No.
So that was kind of a funny one. Just the feeling the rush, you know, and just like, oh my goodness, what's going on, type of thing. But yeah, man, this story is like, let's go, Jesus, let's go. I need help now.
Yeah, I had my ankle broken in a soccer game one time, and so I remember the ambulance coming on the field and kind of having to get there to the hospital real fast.
Yep.
And those moments can teach us a lot, and like I said, identify us with a character like Jairus. I think one of the most beneficial questions or activities, I guess, we can do whenever we read the scripture is just ask, where am I in that? Like, where am I in the crowd? How am I like Jairus? How am I like Jesus? How am I like the woman? All of that. So, Adam, one thing you said in the sermon was just really cool. The translation of that phrase, I guess, Talitha Kum, is that how you would say it?
Sounds great to
me.
Right. That's right.
And how
say it confidently.
You know, technically, maybe it's like, hey, little girl, get up. But really what he's saying is something much more intimate and much more personal. Honey, it's time to get up. It's time, like, it's almost like a dad waking a daughter up. So go into that a little bit. Let's talk about that, because that's really cool what Jesus is doing there.
Yeah, no, I loved it. And in fact, while we are technically correct that the bleeding woman is the only woman that Jesus refers to as daughter.
Sure, yep.
A lot of commentators say that it's Jairus' daughter is actually kind of referred to as a daughter as well, just because
he calls her daughter without calling her daughter.
Exactly. Yeah, because it is. It's a dad, or, you know, going to his daughter on one of those mornings to where you know, maybe she slept in a little too late, and it's just like, hey, you know, hey, sweetheart, it's time to get up. Time to get up. You're burning daylight. And and so we got stuff we need to do today. And so it was just a really, really just intimate, just special, just kind of moment there. And I love the picture of it, because I think it just helps us see that Jesus really does love. I mean, it's not just like this abstract idea concept out there. You can feel the warmth of what Jesus is doing. And I think, too, that you just kind of see that, you know, here he is on the side of her bed, you know, honey, sweetheart, it's time to get up.
Yeah.
And you can see him just like kind of outstretching his hand and his arm and just like, you know, helping to just kind of pull her up and just kind of lift her up out and just kind of get her sitting up. And so she, you know, she's now alive, and it's like, all right, you know, she needs some breakfast. She's been out for a little bit, so let's get some Pop-Tarts in here and cinnamon rolls. I doubt it was oatmeal, but just like, hey, let's take care of her. I just think it's just the tenderness that
is. Get some gravy.
Yeah, let's get her some B's and G's and just take care of her.
You know, when
take
I
her
was
on out to Kelly's, get over there,
Waffle House. No, we won't go there today. Okay.
Here's your bingo card.
So what I took away from that as well is, once again, Jesus' power. Like, this is death, and he's talking to death like it's a girl sleeping in.
Yeah.
And he's like, it's time to get up. It's like when I go to my kids in the morning and kind of try to wake them up, and they've had a shorter night, and, you know, you got to, like you said a moment ago, just maybe pull their bodies up or wiggle them a little bit more, kind of jostle them around. It's like Jesus is doing that to
scratch
death.
Their back.
Yeah. Like, and so the absolute power of him just to be like, yeah, I'm going to talk to death. Like, it's,
that's great.
Just a tough morning, you know?
Yeah.
This, you said this was the first time you have officially preached all the way through it, technically, in this story. So I imagine lots of new research. We've kind of asked this question a lot lately, but just what maybe didn't you talk about yesterday? Just that was maybe a fascinating thing that you learned that we can share with our listeners.
I think a lot of it was, and I don't, you know, we're recording this on Thursday, so I say it may not have ended up in there, and it ends
and
up.
It may.
Sure,
It ends up
I did
there.
The same thing at youth group last night, where I was like, I'm not going to tell this story, because I don't think it'll be helpful. And then in the moment, I was like, actually, I think this story will be helpful. So I'm going to tell it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, is I remember one of the Tim Keller sermons. I was just kind of reading through it. Is he just talked about? And it's where really the idea of, you know, you can't hurry Jesus, you know, came from. But one of the things he said that just kind of resonated with me is the reason why he's able to do everything he's able to do is because not just of his strength, but because of his willingness to become weak.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so it's through his weakness. In many ways, that not just his power, that he's able to conquer death, because he was willing to become weak, and that's that 2 Corinthians 13 passage, you know, where he was crucified in weakness, and so I thought that was a fascinating idea there. And then there's always just all those connections with, you know, the 12 years between, you know, the bleeding woman,
12 and 12,
and you know, the 12 years of pain, the 12 years of delight. You know, of having a daughter.
That's it. Yeah, yeah. The connection between those, the two girls, the two women, are really fascinating. Especially because then you start to get in some of the numerology or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like four is man's number and three is God's number. Yep. So what's four times three?
It's 12.
Well, yeah. So there's just some really cool stuff going on there. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
But let's shift gears a little bit and just talk about some application. You know, this is an incredible story. Jesus's power, his tenderness, his care, his weakness, his strength, all of it. So how do we apply all that to our life? One of the first things you said was Jesus will not be hurried. And your line specifically was, I won't be hurried because I love you.
Mm-hmm.
So are there any other examples from scripture or your personal life that just illustrate God's pace and timing being different than yours?
Well, the arrival of the Messiah comes to mind right away.
Only took
exactly
400 years between old and new. And
isn't it in Galatians at the fullness of time?
Galatians 4:4.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
I mean, we already referenced it, but Lazarus would definitely just like scream to the top of the list.
Mm-hmm. And there's even some cool stuff in there too, because I think wasn't it 4 days?
The
Jewish belief was that they are actually finally dead. Like the spirit is not hovering over their body anymore. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's intentional again. Jesus is on purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Think about David as well. Just the amount of, you know, days and months and years that he's just like, he knows he's going to be the next king, but he's faithful to the Lord and allowing the Lord to work out with Saul what he wants to do. And so he's just waiting in caves.
And, yeah. And
the cool part with
that one, too, is he even he said, I'm not going to lay a hand on the Lord's anointed, even though he could have killed Saul at least twice.
Well, that's one of my favorite stories in the Bible is
the cave one
where Saul is relieving himself, which does not mean taking a nap.
Yeah.
Saul is doing the number two business. And while he's doing that, David cuts off a piece of his robe and then comes out of the cave. Hey, here, I could have killed you. I could have killed you. I didn't. But it's just, cool.
Joseph is another example.
Absolutely.
Just a real long waiting period. I think Abraham and Sarah, I mean, you can kind of, Hannah, which we referenced a couple of weeks ago with Samuel.
I mean,
it's just all over the place.
I wonder, I mean, I don't really know. I haven't thought about this a lot, except just right now. I mean, I wonder if we could find a character where their story happened really quickly. Or if all of our characters in the Bible virtually are those of waiting longer than they wanted to wait. You know, and some of that is years and decades, and some of that might be, you know, not that long, but they're still waiting.
Yeah.
They're still, I don't know that Jesus has ever acted in someone's timeline exactly how they wanted to act.
And John the Baptist, you know, stuck in prison.
Yeah, like
didn't even
so many.
Yeah. Paul had to pray multiple times for the thorn to be removed. Never happened that we know of.
If you're listening
and you know of a Bible character that didn't ever have to wait for something, then like tell us about them, because
we're struggling right now.
Off the top of our mind, we can't think of any. Because maybe that's just the truth of God's character is that he really does make us wait sometimes because it's good for us and because it puts more of his power on display.
Yeah, because he loves us.
Right.
Well, I think of it too as just the perspective of a parent to a child. Sometimes my kids, are like, it's taking so long, you know.
I'm so bored.
Yeah. And me as a dad, you know, I'm looking at it, I'm going, it's really not that long, yeah. You know. And I wonder if God does that sometimes too. He's like eternal and things, you know. Yeah. So anyway, what do we say? Jesus will not be hurried. Yes, because mm-hmm. I love you. Have you ever seen those like waiting in line apps?
Where?
So there's certain apps. Like I remember when we went to Disney World a few years back, there's an app you can get that tells you how long the wait time is on every line.
Yes.
Every roller coaster line. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's other apps that are coming out.
They have that at the Freddy's drive-thru.
They will even tell you, I don't know about Freddy's, but I heard of one where it'll tell you even like the line in the DMV or something, like how long it's a wait. I know sometimes the gym, it'll have their app will have the
busy or not.
Busy. Yeah.
They do that with disc golf courses, believe it or not.
Yes, they do that with disc golf.
It'll let you know that the busy hours of each course.
So why doesn't God do that?
he just hooked us.
He needs a developer.
Yeah.
He needs a developer.
Yeah, software developer. He's waiting for the latest iOS update.
Do you think that he would, I mean, do you think we would trust him more or less, though?
I think that's the obvious answer.
Yeah.
Is that it's through the waiting season that trust is developed. And
100%.
You know, if you know that it's, oh man, I've only got to pray this prayer 7 more times, then awesome. But
where's the faith?
Yeah, and who's actually in control in that moment?
Yeah. Well, and that kind of, not to jump on any toes or go to the next one before you're ready, Josh, but that kind of jumps into the next observation that Adam makes, is that Jesus exceeds our expectations. If he always meets our expectations, if he always shows up when we want him to show up, mm-hmm. if he always communicates to us exactly what timeline things are going to be, then some of the mystery and some of the awe and some of the care that he demonstrates for us are going to be missed. Like we're not going to have our expectations met whenever he just does that for us all the time.
Yeah. So let's just talk a little bit in your own life where you've learned to go at Jesus's slower, more unhurried pace, or when he has exceeded your expectations because of a season of waiting, or where he's giving you grace coming out of a disappointment. Anything jump to mind?
Yeah, I told this story at youth group last night, but my senior year of Bible college comes to mind, where I had done the summer internship here 2018.
Yep.
Into that summer, kind of unofficially was told, hey, we want you back, kind of a thing. So I knew going into my senior year of college that I was going to probably end up here and do youth ministry. And I was really excited about it, like, because the summer that I had here in 2018, just great church, great people, great staff, great students. The only thing that wasn't great was Waffle House. And so I was just really, really excited to come do ministry at Corinth, really excited to move to Georgia. But there was a year of waiting to where it actually happened. And so it was when I got back to Bible college, there was a little bit of anxiousness that set in. And it's like, I'm excited and I feel called, but also at the same time, I'm following Josh Moore, who's the best youth minister I've ever seen in my life. At the same time, it's, you know, a little bit of a bigger church than some of my classmates are, you know, getting jobs at. And so am I a little bit like, am I actually ready? Am I prepared for this? And so started questioning kind of my own abilities, my own preparedness, and just a little bit anxious about it. Until that night, and I've told this story, I don't know that I've told it on the podcast, but I've told it last night at youth group, that night, that I was preaching for the admissions department at Ozark at a youth group in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I was in the part of my sermon where I was sharing the current circumstances of my life and talking about how I feel called to Georgia. I'm anxious about it. That's where I'm going. Like, I'm taking a step of faith because I'm moving there. And so I would encourage the students, you need to take a step of faith too, and come check out Ozark Christian College. But it was right there in that very moment I was sharing that story that I start getting text messages from, you know, students and volunteers. Hey, we're so excited that you're coming. You're going to do a great job. We can't wait to have you here. And in that moment, like, I had my phone up on the little music stand because the youth minister gave me like, hey, you've got like 15 minutes. And I'm like, okay, I got to have a timer up. So I had a timer up. And so I'm seeing these text messages come in as I'm telling that story. I had to kind of stop and gather myself from not getting too emotional. And then I looked at the students and kind of told them exactly what was happening right there. Cause
it's pretty cool. Yeah.
And it was like, I had to change it up and see it. Well, I'm not anxious anymore.
Okay.
Right. Like,
interesting. Yeah.
So, cool. So it was a season where I was excited to be here, no doubt, but I was a little bit anxious about my own abilities. Am I prepared for this? It's all new. What if I can't find a place to live? What if I don't find new community? I was anxious. Get those text messages. I'm not anxious anymore. And so Jesus showed up at just the right time, even though I wish he would have showed up sooner. he showed up when it was good for me to good for me to see it. So that was the first thing that came to mind. Maybe, but just because it's fresh on my mind, told the story and my sermon at youth group last night.
Yeah, that's cool. Because what was going on here on the East Coast was that we had just made the announcement in our youth group.
I just let that out.
Yeah, and said, hey, Luke is coming. And so in that moment, you got people, you know, sharing text messages and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So really, really, really neat. Adam, what about you?
Well, I shared a story in the message, so I won't recap that. But I'll go. I will say this, you know, whenever it comes to, you know, he won't be hurried and those things, you know, there are things that like I continue to pray for today that honest to goodness, I've been praying for probably daily for 3 straight years that still haven't found complete resolution. And so it's one of those things to where I feel like what Jesus does for us or with us or to us is he looks at us and says, you know, hey, if it looks like I'm doing something that doesn't make any sense, I need you to trust that I have facts that you don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not hurrying. I'm not delaying necessarily. Okay. You don't need to look at this as a denial or delay. Right. Just know that I've got more information than you do. And I've got a different way that this is going to work out. And so I think that's part of it. And that just goes back to the idea is like he will exceed our expectations. Mm-hmm. And we wanted a healing. He's going to give a resurrection. And so it's just trusting and continuing to trust.
That's good.
Yeah. This isn't necessarily in my faith life, but just, to, I guess, pull back the curtain a little bit. Sometimes at Bible college, one of the, I guess, stereotypes is the whole, like, you get married in college and ring by spring and all this stuff, and you're going to find your perfect
going
mate.
Going to get your MRS degree.
Followed by your MOM.
Yeah, that's right. And that was not my story. Barely even dated in college, to be truthful. And then I moved to Georgia, similar, like Luke, just with expectations that it was going to be great, but with, you know, just wondering how everything was going to work out. And a year later is when Sasha and I met on a trip, and we met in the Chicago O'Hare Airport, you know, so for the full story, I'll catch you up later. But just even that, like, was just crazy how that worked out. And then we were dating long distance for a while. And so I hated that. And yet God used that, like, I don't know, 1.5, 2 years
mm-hmm.
of long distance, like where we only saw each other for a couple of days at a time. Like
pre-FaceTime.
It was pre, there was, so the technology that was Skype. Out was Skype. The only video thing was Skype.
Yes. Right.
So, I mean, now there's what? Zoom. Hangouts and Zoom and FaceTime and all that stuff. It was pre all that. So, yeah, I mean, that was definitely a season that was just, it was long and it was waiting. But now I look back and I'm just really grateful for the way everything worked out,
mm-hmm.
you know? Man, there was 3 kind of quick hitting application points as well. I want to talk about these. Ignore those who tell you to give up, refuse fear, mm-hmm. and keep on believing.
Yeah.
So kind of like the song, Don't Stop.
Yeah, Don't Stop Believing. Yeah.
Cut it out.
Don't stop. Yeah. I tried to get the band to do it, and they just weren't ready for it.
All right.
Probably okay.
No, so let's think, let's group all 3 of these together, because I think you did that in the sermon, just real quick, and just think how and who and what situations jump into your mind where you need to ignore those who are telling you to give up. Mm-hmm. How do you refuse fear, and how do you keep on believing? They all kind of play with each other there, I guess, right? So,
Yeah, and they ignore those who tell you to give up. I think that we've all seen that whenever we try to start believing, or we try to start following, or we're saying, hey, I'm going to trust Jesus for this, it is not uncommon for people to try to kick you down, tell you you're stupid, tell you this is dumb. Why are you still waiting on this? It's gone. It's too late. Just give up, you know, just curse God and die. I mean, essentially, is what people say. And so we're going to ignore that, because we're going to trust the promises and we're going to believe. You know, I just love the picture of Jesus with Jairus there after everything has gone on. And so Jairus's friends are like, hey, quit bothering him. Mm-hmm. You know, she's dead, you know, so time to move on. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you guys see it. I'd love to hear you guys see it. But in my mind, so I've got two ways that I see it. One is Jesus, playful Jesus.
Sure.
So where he just picks him up, or he just grabs him by the shoulders and just smiles and says, hey.
I got you, bro.
Yeah.
Almost like a little wink. Like,
yeah. Just keep on believing.
Just watch what I'm about to do. Yeah. Yeah.
Don't listen to them. You just keep on believing. You don't give up. Now, the other one that I've got, and this is one to where I don't think this is the one I used in the sermon. I think I used the playful, you know, kind of wink in the sermon. Mm-hmm. But the other one that I kind of get to is just like this intensity, mm-hmm. this intense Jesus, to where he's mm-hmm. looking at this dad who just got the absolute worst news. Like, you know, we all know people who have lost spouses, who've lost parents and those things, but we also know people who have lost their children. Mm-hmm. And every single person that I talk to would say, losing a child is the absolute.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So that's why I tend to think it might have been more of intense Jesus.
Yeah,
to where he just grabs him and he knows that this guy's world is just completely, just it's over, and so just like this intense, like don't you stop believing in me? Mm-hmm. You keep believing. Don't you give up on this because I need you to trust me in that. So don't listen to them. Refuse your fear. Okay, just. Don't give in to the fear that you're feeling right now. I know it feels like everything is done. I know that everything feels like it's over, but it's not. You just keep trusting me. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we are, okay? Is if we want to see Jesus exceed our expectations, if we want to understand that Jesus isn't going to be hurried, the way that we maintain faith through it all is we ignore those who tell us they're going to give up. They try to kick dirt on our parade or whatever. We refuse fear. We just like say, I'm not going to be afraid. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I read somewhere, it's like, even though I walk through the shadow of the valley of death, I will fear no evil. That's like a declarative statement.
Mm-hmm. It's a choice. It's active. Yeah.
I will not fear. I refuse to do it. And I'm going to keep believing. Mm-hmm. And so just keep on pressing on. So yeah, I just think it's hopefully just a helpful reminder of like how do we do these things? You know, how do we follow an example of somebody like Jairus? Mm-hmm.
Luke, what jumps into your mind for all, you know, those ignore those who tell you to give up, or refusing fear, keeping on believing? How do we do that? What situations jump into your mind?
Yeah, I'm thinking about just like when the Lord calls you to take a next step in faith, or the Lord calls you to a certain type of obedience. It often doesn't make sense to other people. Right. So like, thinking about, I feel like the Lord's calling me into ministry. Oh, I don't think he is. I mean, come on. No. I really do feel like this is, no, that's, you're probably wrong.
Yeah.
Right. And that there it is. Boom. The people who are, they're not necessarily telling you to give up, but they're telling you, I don't think you're really in tune with what the Lord is telling you. And it's not just that example. There are other examples.
God can't use somebody like you. Correct. You don't have,
Right. And so it's one of those things. It's like, no. The moment that you feel called to something, the moment that you know what it is that the Lord is asking of you, you got to go do that, regardless of who it is that says you might be overthinking it, or you're not really I don't really know if that was the Lord, all that sort of stuff. You got to go do that and refuse the fear and keep on believing that when you do take a next step of faith and you go out in obedience, that the Lord is going to be faithful and actually exceed your expectations and blow your mind. So I'm just kind of thinking through that a little bit. And that I gave one example that plays out in a ton of different examples, right?
Yeah.
you don't need to confess that sin. That's mm-hmm. normal. That's normal sin. Mm-hmm. Everybody deals with that. So mm-hmm. yeah, you don't need to confess that. Mm-hmm. No, you really do. And you need to overcome that and admit that you've got a problem.
Well, yeah, like you don't need to get sober. You don't need right. to do that. Yeah. I mean,
it's just the fun thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are the people that you sometimes have to ignore. It's not necessarily people who are telling you to give up, although you do need to ignore that. But sometimes you need to ignore the people who are enabling you to stay disobedient to God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Adam, you said this a lot through the years, just no one speaks to you more than you.
Yeah.
So sometimes I think the person you need to ignore is yourself.
Yeah, that's true.
Because your self-talk sometimes is... it's just dangerous. And the word, whenever you said a while ago, declaration about Psalm 23, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, mm-hmm. I will fear no evil. That's a declaration. Another thing we've talked about in the past are just daily declarations.
Yeah.
And I think it might be worthwhile just to spend a moment on those. Do you want to share just kind of what those are? Not necessarily the actual scripts, but just the idea behind them, just these truths that you can declare every single day that are true because they're what God says about you and not based upon our feelings only?
Yeah, no, it's just like, you know, one of the things I try to remind myself, and this is actually on my bathroom mirror, and honest to goodness, I don't read it every day.
Sure.
But it's there. Mm-hmm. And so it reminds me, it's like, hey, I'm disciplined. Christ in me, stronger than the wrong desires in me.
Uh-huh.
I'm not defined by my failures nor my successes. I don't give up. I'm anointed. I'm equipped. I'm called to preach. I'm sharp. I'm in shape. I am a good husband, a good father, and a good friend. And just speaking those things, just reminding myself of what I believe God has said about me as well. And Craig Rochelle's got a new book. There's another name that you hear all the time on this. And trying to pull it up. But we'll see how good the internet is back here in this little corner. So while I'm pulling that up, Luke, do you have any declarations?
What's the there? Title of the book? Power to Change?
Power to Change, yeah. It's really good.
Yeah.
It's really good.
I don't have a lot of declarations. I actually am glad I brought my Bible because I have my prayer requests that I pray every day. And some of those end up being a lot of the same declarations. And this actually, Adam, this practice... you turned me on to from your guy, Alan.
Yeah.
Just, you know, all of these different things that just daily prayers and declarations and stuff like that. And so, you know, every day I'm starting prayers with God, today I want a sense of your presence.
Mm-hmm.
So don't help me not to miss you.
Yeah.
Because I know that you're near. So give me an awareness that you are here. Growing passion for your word, ability to lead in love and to cherish Tristan, freedom from distraction. Prayers over ministry partners and wisdom and discernment and all of these different things, praying for God's aid throughout the day over all of this. Been really, really helpful to start and preframe the day with the Lord's presence, knowing that he is with me as I am needing all of these things to honor him through the day.
Yeah, and that dovetails into what Groeschel's line is. It's really rememberable. So it's... are memorable, so it's funny that I could remember it, but you do what you do because of what you think of you.
Uh-huh.
And so that's why these declarations, that's why these morning reminders of just like, okay, here's who I want to be. I want to be a person, because what you're doing is you're making a declaration.
Right.
When you're saying, God, help me not to miss your presence, you're making a declaration. I am a person.
I'm not going to miss God's presence.
Yeah, I'm a person who is sensitive to God's presence. You know, this is who I am. And so what we think of us is what determines what we end up doing. What about you, Josh?
Yeah. I've done some thinking before about just our whole family too, and tried to think about what we can declare about each other as well, like to each other. And so one things we've started to do with our kids, putting them to bed, is just asking them questions every night that they can answer yes to, you know? So like, do you know that I love you?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Do you know that God loves you more than I do? Yes. Do you know that I love you if you do good? Do you know that I love you even when you don't do good, you know?
Right.
And then speaking those declarations to them is important, but also just for me, like I have some of them too. That, for example, one verse that's been important to me for a long time is just the greatest among you would be a servant.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just have that as a daily reminder that greatness is meekness. Greatness is service. And so I'm at my greatest when I'm serving. I also, my actual name, Joshua, means Yahweh saves.
Right.
And so one of my other declarations, though, is Yahweh saves, not me. So it gives me a little release to
Yahweh saves. I do not save.
That's right.
Yahweh does save you.
He does save me. I do not save. Yeah. And so, because, I don't know, sometimes you get this Messiah complex where you think you're totally responsible for somebody's, you know, repentance or salvation or something. Yeah. It's like, I have a part to play, but
The position of Savior has already been taken.
Yeah.
Yep, they stopped taking job applications for that about 2,000 years ago.
Yeah. You know, things where I want to be gentle because and patient because God has been gentle and patient with me. Things like that, too. We still have actually a prayer taped up to our mirror. It's a prayer for a season of uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
And we passed that out at church a while ago. I don't remember when you preached that, Adam, but we passed it out to everybody. And it's still in our mirror because it's just a good reminder that whatever it is in our life, there's seems to be all the time some sort of uncertainty. And it's good to remind ourselves that even in that season, God is on the throne and he's teaching us in it. So,
yeah. Another one that I'm in the habit of practicing is just the great confession. I believe that mm-hmm. Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God, and today he is my Lord and Savior.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of did a little communion meditation on that with at some point within the last year, just telling the story about how I was baptized when I was a kid and said that phrase and believed it and was confident. But the next time those words came out of my mouth I was over 20 years old. And it was a Bible college professor who was leading us in communion after a fast. And he asked me to say those words. And at that moment, it was just like this overwhelming feeling of like, I know that I believe that, but I haven't said it in, you know, 13 years out loud. And so, you know, I say that every day now, as often as I remember, and just, I believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God. He is today, just like he was when I was a kid, just like he was when I was 20, just like he will be in 20 years.
Yep.
Today he is my Lord and Savior. So that one's a really powerful one for me too.
Yeah. So be like Jairus in that moment and listen to Jesus in the midst of a crowd that is either just purely distracting you or who's actually trying to drag you down or get you to stop bothering Jesus. Ignore the crowd, go to Jesus. Bottom line was Jesus can take you from fear to faith, which is incredible in the story of Jairus. But as we hinted at a while ago, really an overarching theme through this whole narrative, Mark 4 and 5, Jesus takes us from fear to faith. And I think the word in there, we're talking earlier about the word can, and that's a big thing, right? Because we play a role in it. Like Jairus still had to take a step to his house.
Yeah.
You know, the bleeding woman still had to step towards Jesus. The disciples still had to get on the boat, you know, all this stuff. So he can, if you will submit to him and let him,
if you'll allow him to.
Allow him to, he will. So, the challenge was kind of cool. It's time to get up. And so Adam, just give a brief word there. Let's challenge our people before we do something fun and quick here at the end.
Okay. Yeah. No, it's just, it's time to wake up.
Mm-hmm.
For some people, I wish, and I don't know if this would work or not, but it's like, I wish instead of hearing, honey, it's time to get up, I wish that they'd say, hey, mm-hmm. it's time to get up. You know, yeah. It's like my dad always had this phrase. It'd be just like, you know, you're burning daylight. And he would just always get on us. It'd be like, Dad, it's summer. We don't need to be up right now. And he's like, you're burning daylight. You need to be out of bed, mm-hmm. you know. And for some people, that's kind of where I would kind of go. It's like, man, you've been in a spiritual slumber for months, weeks, years, decades. It's time to get up. It's not that you don't know enough. It's not that you don't have enough information. It's not that you don't even know what to do. It's just wake up, just get up and, you know, do that. You know, whether it's a sin to confess, whether it's a step forward to serve, to start using your gifts, whatever it is, it's just like, man, it's time to get up. But others, it's just like, hey, it's time to get up because you're spiritually dead And it's time to experience a resurrection. And it's a time to experience that moving from fear of you know, what is my standing with God, to a place of faith, to where you are able to have assurance of your salvation and know that you are on the narrow path following Jesus. And so it's just like, what's the step that you need to take? Just wake up. Just get up. Get out of bed. Do something.
Yeah, I like that. Cool. Luke, anything to add?
Get up. Wake up.
Do it.
Do it.
Or I'll come in with some ice water.
That's exactly right. Did your dad do that?
Yeah.
My dad had a squirt bottle.
Yeah. My dad was in the habit of Sunday mornings waking us up for church. He would blare. He had a really, really loud sound system. And our house
was like
super good. He would blare Boston.
There you go.
So every Sunday morning we would be waking up to like, don't look back. all that sort of stuff. It was good. It was good.
That's good.
Boston rocks, man.
I love Boston. Boston's That's awesome. Good stuff.
It's amazing that you like Boston, even though that you were awakened by?
I got woke.
You got woke.
By Boston.
You know, Jairus was waiting. That's kind of been a theme today, is waiting. Summer road trips, we spend a lot of time in the car also waiting. And so we're going to go back and play a Mad Lib about a summer road trip. You guys are going to supply me with the words.
Cool.
And then we're going to read out this Mad Lib. All right. So we'll just alternate. First, Luke, I need an adjective.
Fun.
All right, Adam, I need an adjective.
Adjective. So those are words that describe.
Describes. Yes. Yeah. Descriptive.
So a descriptive word. Magenta. Would that work?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. It was a
All right, I need a adjective. Noun. Person, place, or thing. I need a noun.
From Mount Rushmore.
Both of
from
you.
Both. Yeah. Microphone.
Mount Rushmore.
All right. Now I need a plural noun, Luke.
Knickerbockers.
Knickerbockers. All right, Adam, I need the game.
Game? It's opening day, baseball.
Yeah,
opening game, not day. Sport. All right.
Baseball or, game.
So, Luke, I need another plural noun.
Let's go with... bats, but I'm talking the bird, not
okay.
Not
Adam, I need a verb, wooden. A verb ending in ing from both of you. So Adam and then Luke.
Okay,
a verb ending in ing.
Traipsing.
Traipsing, Luke.
I have no idea what that means.
It's
like walking. Like kind
I was going to go prancing.
Yeah,
yeah, prancing. Yeah, traipsing and prancing.
All right, prancing. Plural noun. We'll go to Adam because Luke has done two of those so far.
A plural noun. Plural noun. Raccoons.
Nice.
Raccoons. All right, Luke, another verb ending in ing.
Swimming.
Swimming. All right, Adam, a noun, and then Luke, a plant.
A noun?
A noun.
Crowd.
All right, Luke, a plant.
Chrysanthemum.
Nice.
Chrysanthemum. I have no idea how to spell that, but I will read it. Okay, Adam, I need a part of the body.
Let's go with pinky toe.
Pinky toe. All right. Luke, I need a place.
Corinth Christian Church.
Nice.
No place I'd rather be.
And Adam, I need a verb ending in ing.
Okay. Crouching.
All right, only three more here. All right, I need an adjective, Luke.
Hilarious.
That's funny.
Yeah.
All right, Adam, a number, and then Luke, a plural noun.
A number?
Uh-huh.
144.
All right, gross. There we go. Plural noun to Luke.
Cows.
All right, here we go. Here's our summer road trip. Presented by Adam and Luke, our summer Mad Lib trivia road trip, whatever, not trivia. Here we go. A vacation is when you take a trip to some fun place with your magenta family.
Ah.
Usually nice. You go to some place that is near a microphone or up Mount Rushmore. A good vacation place is one where you can ride Knickerbockers or play on opening day or go hunting for bats. I like to spend my time traipsing or prancing. When parents go on vacation, they spend their time eating 3 raccoons a day, and fathers play golf, and mothers sit around swimming. Last summer, my little brother fell in a crowd and got poison chrysanthemum all over his pinky toe. My family is going to go to the Corinth Christian Church to practice crouching.
Yeah.
Parents need vacations more than kids because parents are always very hilarious. And because they have to work 144 hours every day all year, making enough cows to pay for that vacation.
There
so that Good. Was a lot of fun. And luckily, it didn't get inappropriate or anything like sometimes Mad Libs can do.
Yeah, we were good.
I picked out a
you
safe
were
one.
Safe.
I picked out a safe one. So, hey, we had some fun, as always. Hope you did too. Hope it was helpful. And next week is Easter. So definitely be here. Definitely invite everybody you know. Excuse me, everybody you know. Family, friends, get here, all that sort of stuff. Any other things we need to say about that? Is next week the last part of Healer, or is it a special? So it's Healer slash
Healer,
Easter.
Yeah, it's Healer part 6.
So, great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And kind of where we're going to be going is, I mean, obviously we'll tell a little bit of the Easter story there because that's kind of why we're there. But the idea of next week is this idea that sometimes God intervenes through miraculous means. Sometimes he doesn't.
Mm.
So how's that for a teaser?
Cool.
And how do we hold on in the midst?
So intrigued.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, it's been good. Hopefully you guys enjoy the weather and, you know, have a great week. We are looking forward to it and we love you. We like you. We'll see you back here in your car or on your walk, wherever you listen. Next week, and man, we can't wait to see you on Easter. So seriously, be here. We can't wait. We'll see you then.